The point is, I joke about racism, because racism is a fucking joke.
Savage!
Solomon.
He is Mr. Solomon.
You know something? At least he's honest.
Ladies and gentlemen.
He's a goddamn weapon.
Can you hear me in the back?
Black men.
Sincere.
I'm so sincere.
S-I-N-E-C-E-R-E. Sincere.
I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover. Politicians, the celebrities.
Nobody does it better.
Welcome to Thought Crimes, everyone. This is your girl, Sincere.
Of course, this is your man, Prince Solomon. Welcome to another wonderful, fantastic podcast of Thought Crimes.
So let's get into our first topic. We're going to talk about the Democratic candidates and also the couple of debates that happened, the one that we had on the 31st and the 30th in Detroit. Also, I think it was a great idea to have the Democratic debate in Detroit. You know, the represents the, you know, the corrosion that has taken place in one of America's great cities, or used to be, the manufacturing decline and other things economically that have taken place in that once great, great city, which had everything. They had the manufacturing jobs. They had the music. At one time, again, one of the shining lights in the United States. So I thought it was a smart move to have the debate be in the heartbeat of Detroit, Michigan. Now, we're going to get into that a little bit, into actually how the debate took place and what we think about who were the winners, who were the losers. But we're also going to talk about our top three candidates and then our honorable mention. For me right now, my top three is Tulsi Gabbard. She's number one for me. Elizabeth Warren is number two, and then Andrew Yang is number three. An honorable mention for me will actually be Marianne Williamson. You know, I think that she brings a fresh energy and she's very energetic. I think when her talking points for self-care, her talking points of focusing on policy and not really being distracted by overly criticizing personalities, you know, and also some of the policies that she want to put forth with mental health, with healthcare in general, and even when it comes to climate change, agriculture, how she talks about reparation. Those are the things that make me give her the honorable mention. So, Prince, who are your top three and what will be your honorable mention?
Well, I'll say it like this. A clear, distant front runner will always be Kamala Harris in my book. No, okay, so you and I, we definitely agree on Tulsi Gabbard. And so far from what I've heard from Andrew Yang, I haven't had a chance to dissect everything, but I can clearly see him being not a top three for me, but a favorable interest for those people who are paying attention to things as it stands right now. And again, anything could change dealing with the culture of politics and in those moments.
So he's not your top three?
No, he's not.
He's your honorable mention, man.
Yeah. He's not in my top three. To be honest with you, Sin, I'm just going to be very frank.
You don't have a top three. I know you're about to say.
Because if I do, and again, some people say, well, Prince, you could have put Andrew Yang up second. Sin knows me and how I am. Once I see what I actually like, you know, from a person or the candidate in itself or themselves or their campaign structure and how they're executing certain things, mind you, I'm aware these are all politicians and they're playing the game and they're looking to play the game very well. That being the case, I'm just rocking with Tulsi right now. I'm really not interested in Bernie Sanders.
Well, you saw he wasn't on my top three or my honorable mention.
Right? Well, that's what I'm just rocking with right now as far as of interest and seeing how she's going to kind of get her way out of this, really blow them away. Some people may argue that she's already done so, but there's still a lot to be had moving forward before we even get a chance to have, you know, the runoff against the other party in itself. But as it stands right now, I'm just interested in Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, let's dissect a couple of them. Let's start with Tulsi. You know, she did a great job on the 31st when she had to debate with Kamala Biden and, you know, Cory Booker and a couple other people that were on that stage. And she really stood out with her I guess you could say her commentary towards Kamala the cop, Harris. And when she talked about her job as a prosecutor in the state of California, and basically said that the people she claimed to be for, which are minorities, people who are dealing with heavy poverty, that you claim to be for those people, but your tier as a prosecutor shows otherwise. As you know, your time as a prosecutor, you didn't go against Big Pharma as hard. She did do a couple of things that people did like, pertaining to Big Pharma and also pertaining to women's rights. But overall, if you want to quantify that, one could say maybe 20% of her time as a prosecutor, she did good work. You know, we're talking about overall. 80% though, she was a total nightmare. Yeah, the evil RoboCop, you could say. Now, if that 20% could have been lifted to 50%, I think I would have had to actually have a more fair commentary for Kamala. Kamala is a Clinton baby, and she doesn't stand by what she claims to love. When she first came in, she did stand by not having a death penalty or sending people to the death penalty just in case they could be someone who could be innocent. And she fought for that at first, only to turn around when she had the opportunity to get rid of the death penalty completely. She didn't do it because she was probably thinking about, you know, I'm doing this to become president eventually, and I don't want people to say, oh, I took the death penalty off. But now looking, now because she didn't take that chance, looking at it now, that would actually been seen as a positive. You know, we talk about prescription drugs. She did go after Big Pharma a bit over in California, only to turn around and then you know, kind of be a Nancy about it and actually give Big Pharma some leeway, a lot of leeway actually. And then she's always been pro cop, so she's never done well there. She's always been pro cop, even during the corruption, even when cops were dealing in prostitution, you know. So she's never been even remotely balanced there.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Kamala RoboCop Harris, again, OCP's finest, old Detroit. Ironic how they held it in Detroit, old Detroit in OCP. If you check out the RoboCop franchises, clearly one of my favorite sci-fi franchises. I agree with everything that you state. I'm going to kind of contextualize maybe her mindset at the time, which is most prosecutors' mindsets. Remember now, they're prosecutors. So the beefier their conviction rate is, the better they look. That means they're actually doing something in their community. They're tough on crime. All of this, blase, 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 blah. In the era of Black Lives Matter and post-Black Lives Matter, because it's no longer a stated movement as it stands right now, it would have been beautiful if Kamala was saying, you know what, I rescinded the death penalty in my state. I pushed for that. Given what has been taking place in the African-American community, of course, I gotta throw some of you brown nuggets in there as well, but predominantly the African-American community, which is what most people are appealing to kind of kick off that fire starting pistol charge of their career. It would have been great for Kamala, at the very least, in all of the criticisms that have came out of our communities about her, somebody or someone's or somebody's could have easily said, hey man, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things I don't agree with her, but that right there, her rescinding the death penalty, that's a saving grace for her. That's like Carmelo Anthony making it to the playoffs and getting pretty deep despite everything that went on in his career. That's your one saving grace, right? She doesn't have that. She doesn't have that, and she didn't really, quote unquote, have a scene-stealing moment like Tulsi Gabbard, which you and I, we've talked before.
Right. Yeah, her scene moment was the last debate she had where she used the busing to go after Joe Biden, even though they share the same policy. They believe in it, you know. She believes in it now on a federal level. He believed in it 30 years ago on the federal level. So they have the same approach and belief, but it was a smart political move that worked very well for her, that again, eventually Tulsi will take that win away from her. But you made a great point that I think you should go further into, so I'm going to actually beeline it back to that. When she probably first started, you know, she probably think, you know, I'm going to do something for the small guy, you know, the Big Pharma. I'm not going for the death penalty. for anybody accused of even a heinous crime. But like you said, it's about being a winner. And if you can be a winner and show strength and lie, then sometimes that's a good look. And we've seen those type of people win in politics before too. Her winning was more important than her doing the right thing after a while. And actually very quickly. Because if you see, if you go after poor people, your record has a higher percentage of a success rate than if you go after people with the money, people with the clout, people with the power behind them. And if you go after those people too much, your success rate will be lowered because you're going to catch a lot of L's, because a lot of times those people can wiggle their way out. Not all the time. We've seen that some of them get caught, but not as great of a percentage as of people in poverty. Like if you talk about white collar criminals to the high degree, maybe 5%, maybe 10%, but people in poverty, 90%. I mean, your record could look very clean.
It would actually, you know, it would always reminds me of, this is why I love Star Wars. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, Phantom Menace may have been boring to a lot of people, but to the politically informed, it's actually pretty damn good. Moving all the way up to the trilogy, the final part of the trilogy, the second half. Like you said, when you target the poor, the people, if just even getting locked up temporarily would throw their whole economic echo chamber out of stratosphere. Like they would lose their job. They would lose their power. I know for a fact it hasn't happened to me. Okay. It hasn't happened to me, but knock on wood of George Washington teeth. But I've had friends or associates who had to serve time for 2 weeks, a month. Same when they came out, job was gone, apartment is gone, car has been repossessed, right? Think about that. You target those people who can't fight back. We know in this quote-unquote justice system, the longer your money stretched, the more buffer room you have to fight off perceived injustices. So when Kamala Harris turned, going back to what I was referencing Star Wars, when she turned with her blue lightsaber, she turned from a blue lightsaber to a red lightsaber, and she targeted the Jedi Temple, i.e. the poor, with all of those little baby Jedis in there, and then those poor people in there, she had a slaughterhouse. Her office had a slaughterhouse. And that happens with many prosecuting offices. There have been so many defenders that turn prosecutors because there's more money in it. There's a lot of money. You're going through and you're just slaughtering people. People are getting convicted and they're losing, not because evidence was presented well. A lot of them are simply losing because they don't have the money to fight back. And what they get is a court-appointed attorney, which they will always turn state on the people. It happened to my mother. You know, the guy gets up there and he flips everything. My mother ends up going to jail. But I've seen that happen to many men and women around me who couldn't fight back, because when you're facing that gavel and you're facing that judge and you have, you know, you have the bench, right? For a lot of people, just viscerally, it's very intimidating. And the system knows this. So they bully people by hard coercing them into taking plea deals or into submitting to a lesser charge, right? When you have somebody, can you imagine the poor people on the other end of Kamala Harris when she's prosecuted, when she was an active prosecutor, and you see how wild her energy is? Can you imagine the level of intimidation that they must have felt? And having a weak court-appointed attorney, and we all know court-appointed attorneys and prosecutors, they have dinner with each other, they have friends with each other, some of them even do some hanky-panky with each other. They always made deals that the poor suffered at the end of it.
I'm going to say this, and people are going to think that this is outlandish statement.
Okay.
But Kamala Harris is a intelligent Trump, and this is what I mean. Both of them are bullies. Bullies that when they're bullying, people think are tough. Now, of course, Kamala isn't as out with it as Trump. She's a classic politician. Trump is not. Trump was never a politician, but he's a bully. So that's why he leaves everything out in the open, naked. The naked king, right? The naked empress. Kamala is still a traditional politician, so she's not going to look that bizarre. But if you think about it, Kamala got off bullying people who she felt she could overpower. and so has Trump. The only difference is background-wise, so the people who are crying and screaming right now, of course, Kamala actually had to work hard, and Trump is a welfare baby. So we know there's a difference there. But where they are alike pertaining to the bullying is people saw strength in them until they see somebody who really got to come to play, someone who really has a backbone. So when you saw Tulsi, who has no fear when it comes to any of these candidates, and she has no fear when it comes to Trump, how can you, when you've seen people who you have a kinship with lose an arm, lose a leg, bleeding, screaming, crying for their life, thinking about their daughter, thinking about their son, their wife, their grandma. You know, when you go through war and you also have the guts to understand what's going on with the intel, with the CIA, with all these different branches and institutions, that even you who went to the call of duty after 9/11, and to be so smart and humble but yet so strong at the same time, where you could say, they duped us, they duped me, I went in there to serve my country and they gave us false intel, which is, and from that experience, I've always been extremely cautious when it comes to foreign affairs, because you can be lied to. And she has the experience to say, it's not like Ron Paul, where you'd be like, oh, kooky old man, you never was in the military. So what are you saying, right? This is somebody who went and had casualties because of a lie and was there and saw the blood firsthand. Well, so when you have like somebody like that standing up to a Kamala Harris, and then she doesn't even blink, she don't even care. And even in her interviews, she's on Fox, and she never gets nervous, she doesn't care. You cannot break somebody who's been in a situation and multiple situations of that. In Hawaii, when someone accidentally pressed the button where the alarms went off, they said a missile was heading directly to Hawaii, and she was inland. You know how Hawaii, a lot of them believe inland is like, you know, if you're in you know, Minnesota or New York, you know, the mainland of the United States. She didn't even flinch. She was ready to go try to help her people as best as possible, and she had a very calm demeanor. And then of course a sigh of relief when she realized that somebody but the buttons, and of course that young man probably got, you know, fired. But before we go into your commentary, actually let's remind everybody by playing the clip of Tulsi actually combating Kamala Harris on her record as a prosecutor.
I want to bring in Congresswoman Gabbard. Congresswoman Gabbard, you took issue with Senator Harris confronting Vice President Biden at the last debate. You called it a quote false accusation that Joe Biden is a racist. What's your response?
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting Black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Harris, your response?
Nope. That's Kamala. Mars attacks. Coneheads. Didn't even stand her ground. I actually want to go back to something a little bit earlier that you was alluding to, and we're talking about the characteristics of, again, two of the front runners. I would say Kamala is not a front runner in the sense of being ahead of Tulsi, but nonetheless, the reason why I say that is because the Democrat Party, they're clearly going to keep trying to resuscitate her fractured image right now. Because she stepped in the ring with Andy Ruiz, and somebody tell Kamala she didn't prepare for the fight. Joe Biden, it was an easy, it wasn't even a knockout. It was almost like you kind of just leaned on Mr. Burns and he fell.
Yeah, he has plastic surgery. I'm sorry to say that. But did anybody see his face?
Yeah.
He has Botox.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe Biden, who's 70-something years old, has fucking Botox. But continue.
Octopus face.
Oh, my God. It's horrible.
So, the thing is this. I want to go back to Tulsi's military history. My brother, growing up, I love him to death. He had his moments where he got nervous when confronted by aggressors in the neighborhood. He was always a jokester. He had learned to get himself out of that by joking. You know, there were people that wanted to hit him, and then he said a joke and they laughed, right? They're like, man, Rah, you funny. Some of them did it. Some of them was like, nah, I'm still gonna knock you out, nigga, right? When he went to the military and he witnessed his friend Owens getting killed in a very violent manner by insurgents, and he also had IEDs hit his truck. He had ringing and almost lost his hearing, and he suffered concussion, even residual concussion effects later on afterwards, CTE syndrome. One thing I had noticed, though, when he came back, he didn't have any fear in him, though. It's actually arguably one of my favorite Brad Pitt films behind Legend of the Fall is Troy, you know, and his character had no fear, or he learned to channel the fear correctly. But nonetheless, he dealt with confrontation. That part of him was 100%. He dealt with confrontation. When I look at Tulsi Gabbard, and I'm just saying favorably, I see a lot of strength. It's something that has always piqued my interest about her. Hadn't followed her 100%. I'd say about a good 50 to 65%, you know. But when you went through everything that she went through, and like I was referencing my brother, you know, now he's told me stories before where in his neighborhood, quote unquote, the guys that perceive themselves to be gangs and thugs or whatever, gangsters. Yeah, one guy tried to confront him at the light with a pistol. He said, I didn't flinch. He says, I was ready to go right there. And he says the guy saw him and the guy got scared. And the guy was like, man, we need to just chill on this. And my brother was like, no, absolutely. Let's have it right here. Let's make 4th of July right now at the light. It's something about going over there or dealing with war that it breaks a man and a woman in a different way. A seal of fear has been cracked. I've seen that with most of them that have come back, even when they're having problems, you know, dealing with post-traumatic PTSD, all that type of stuff. But nonetheless, there's a fearlessness about it. In fact, they fear more the civilian life. The civilian life, going back, sitting down at your table, having coffee. They're, a lot of them actually more terrified of that. And I've seen that, heard it, been around a lot of war vets. They've talked about this. So when you're talking about Tulsi Gabbard,
who's still active too, just to let people know.
Yeah.
She's still registered.
Talk about that. When you're talking about Tulsi Gabbard, though, you got to understand, and to the people listening, essentially a majority of the people she's on stage with are dorks. Privileged dorks.
In different ways.
In many different ways. Kamala Harris is forward aggressive in a different way.
She seemed like a sorority girl who had her face in the books.
She's the type, after being accomplished academically, scholastically, she's throwing her weight around.
Right.
I'm all in your face with it. I'm stunning.
Know.
Remember she laughed at the committee commission where she said, and people look at me like, you're really going to prosecute parents. And she was bold about that. But it was only because of the power she was able to wield. The seat where she sat.
Well, she said that.
Yeah.
You know, she admitted that. Yeah. She said when she was on the Breakfast Club or some interview, she said, well, now that I've got some weight in the game, I plan on using it.
See?
So the first thing I did, like, okay, so how much weight are you going to use when you become president? Hell no, I ain't voting for your ass.
Well, what's beautiful about this, as people still needed to see fearlessness demonstrated. That's what I loved about what I saw with Tulsi basically punching Kamala in the face and watching Kamala watch her own nose bleed. And she didn't do anything.
I love everything that Tulsi insinuated.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about black girl magic, but you have been the harm for a lot of black women with children.
Absolutely.
For a lot of black men pertaining to the prison industrial complex, and black women when it comes to the school system, who's trying to get their kids to go to school that are facing poverty in California. You did not help your people. And this is something that we just got to be honest about, because I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. Tulsi, who's from Hawaii, has always represented her people, the people from Hawaii, the ethnic group she comes from, the culture she comes from, right? Whether it's from military people to the native people of Hawaii, to the citizens of Hawaii, the state of Hawaii, to the environment of Hawaii. She's been consistent with that. And then the people that she haven't stood for in the past, she apologized a long time ago for that, like her views on gay marriage. With Kamala the cop, the people who she claimed to before, especially let's go with black people first, black people, you know, number one, you have not stood for, you have not had a passion for, but now you want to try to pimp them by being with two tones on the Breakfast Club to vote for you. That is insane.
Oh man, I don't know, Sin. I don't know if we're going to get to some other subjects. This is a real beefy, meaty subject here that we can dissect culturally on so many levels. We can always look up their policies, their voting record. I think at this point in time, it's very important to demonstrate and highlight why one candidate is working and why the other one is losing steam. You brought up something. You said about the Breakfast Club, right? You're now listening to the letter, right? Yeah. She was placed there. Kamala was placed to be on the Breakfast Club. The establishment system on the left, if you want to call it that. Again, when we say left, doesn't mean we're right. When we say right, doesn't mean we're left. Stop it.
Oh, she has some conservative ties, too.
Oh, absolutely. A lot.
Prosecutor, you know.
Absolutely. She's a statist.
And she was pro-cop.
She's pro-state.
Yeah, the police unions never had an issue with her.
Yeah. Blue Republican, essentially. Right. Okay, so Kamala Harris was deemed or tapped to be the shining beacon of the left. You know, and remember now, people forget that she is a Clinton baby, like you stated. But not only that, she has very close ties to the Obamas. Very close ties. Her and Michelle and Barack, they're all good friends. I believe Barack Obama's sister is good friends with Kamala.
His sister and her kind of look alike. Sister's a little bit darker.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Kamala Harris's sister worked on the Clinton campaign the last time around before she started falling over and knocking into shit. Okay, just pick that bitch up. So here's the thing about it, though. Even with all of that placement and footlining of Kamala Harris, it's like what we said and what you've said plenty of times. When it's showtime and it's time to perform, that is one thing you cannot fake. You could not fake that Kamala Harris had shriveled up in front of Tulsi Gabbard. Because let's be real, Kamala was informed that I'm going to have a clear path to this thing. Kamala was informed that, hey, I got this. I'm on the Breakfast Club. Black girl magic, at least a part of them, not all, because there's a lot of them with their arms crossed with their eyebrows raised. What is this? Just like the rest of a lot of us type people. And just in general, too, because she hasn't really caught flight with the greater national sense as well. I mean, there are some people who still.
Who, Kamala?
Yeah.
Oh, no, she did.
Yeah.
She did after the Nas.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. After Joe Biden.
Yeah, Illmatic cover. She was everywhere now.
Because even some of the people thought, oh, that was just, oh.
Right. She increased to third place.
Right.
In the polls, most polls, Biden's number one. You know, Elizabeth Warren is two, and Kamala Harris is three. And in some polls, though, Bernie is four, or Bernie is second. But the whole point is Biden, Bernie, Elizabeth, and Kamala have been the top four candidates in the polls.
Well, at least that's what we're told.
You mind if I say this real quick? I'm sorry. I just thought about this. Them three did have the most campaign donations.
Okay.
than the rest of them. So I can't remember who came in number one. It's between Elizabeth and Bernie. Then in second place was Kamala. Kamala was in third place, and then Biden was in fourth. So they are the most money driven campaigns as well. People putting into the pot for them.
It's what's been informed, because we have to keep in mind the creation of the Gallup poll. The creation of the Gallup poll, as again Carol Quigley and so many minds like himself, was created to give the public their opinion. When we need to sell you on certain policies and politicians, we may do a peer review of like 1,000 people.
Can I ask, speak on that real quick? This is what I will say. When the Fox News did a Gallup poll and they said it looked like Mitt Romney would win, most of the moderate and liberal Gallup polls had it right about Obama winning, and then also before the Obama. The Gallup polls pertaining to Hillary, they weren't necessarily wrong, because they weren't going on the Electoral College vote. They was going on the popular vote.
Yeah.
And technically, if you want to just be technical, CNN and the rest of them did get it right, mm-hmm, about the public being swayed slightly
right
towards Hillary, but Trump was still elected because of the Electoral College. When they said that Stacey Abrams would be very close, but there's a possibility she could win, it was very close and she lost slightly. So the Gallup polls have been, at least when it comes to these races, the moderate ones have been 95% accurate.
So this is what I'll say to that. I will always have to diverge from any sources or Gallup polls that come out of CNN. I'm just going to have to, because we understand what CNN is. It is what it is. We know what it is. Just like we definitely understand what Fox is. We understand what MSNBC is. We understand what a lot of these quote unquote outlets are, right? Which they've actually had an uptick in their viewership under Trump now, especially CNN. CNN was struggling under Obama as far as viewers go. When he came in, they got a high. But by his second term, they had more than likely at many times dropped down to less than 100,000 viewers per night, right? And this is a multi-million dollar machine known as CNN. Okay, so here's my thing about what's going on with Kamala Harris. I went online a little bit earlier today, and I was reading certain articles about Kamala Harris. A lot of the tentacle feelers out of the establishment left are really trying to aggressively curb what had taken place with Tulsi Gabbard. They're really trying. In many cases, a lot of them are very upset. They're angry. But it's like an individual said on Bill Maher when he was listening to it, and I overheard it. They're supposed to fight. They're supposed to distinguish themselves from each other at this point. Nobody's supposed to planeteer their way up and try to all together, one for all, bring Trump down.
Right. I think healthcare is very blatant. I mess with Bernie and Elizabeth Warren on that. But I think Tulsi is correct, and some of the other ones are correct. But I feel Tulsi is more honest about it, and she probably would actually go through with it. Can't get rid of people's private insurance and just say everybody will be going under the government's insurance, because even though you're following a system that is better for the most Americans, you got to understand that Americans, it's sometimes quick change is correct and sometimes it's not. And when you're dealing with healthcare, a lot of Americans are schizophrenic when it comes to it. A lot of them say they got good healthcare insurance, even though they there's $5,000 extra they have to pay, or because they like the doctor's personality, the facility is clean. So they kind of got a schizophrenic viewpoint when it comes to that. Having the public option and just making it be ran very well and convincing people through that to completely abandon their private insurance to the point where eventually private insurance probably won't exist anymore. That is the smarter way of letting the American people choose and having that option than just going completely on the public option the way that Bernie and Elizabeth wants to do it. I think with education, you could be radical like that and just say, let's free education, certain ways you could implement. But I think with healthcare, you got to be more wise about it. And you got to understand, just wiping it completely off, very bold. I like the backbone from both of them, even though I'm not for Bernie, because I feel on issues of race, he's a bit hypocritical. I don't think Elizabeth has that, which is why I'm in more favor of her. But I do like their backbone and tenacity, but I think Tulsi's strategy and some of the other Democratic candidates' strategy on that is much better and wiser.
I heard some of their talking points with dealing with HMOs and PPOs and dealing with insurance. Mm-hmm. Airball! I'm sorry, airball. Now, I definitely agree with you 100% when it comes to education. You know how I am. I'm really big on that. I really feel we have an education issue in this country. I mean, realistically, from what we have all been told growing up, we all wanted to have higher education at one point in time, valued education. We all wanted a path to a fulfilling to really great life. And that's why people go to college and universities, and that's why they jump right into debt. You're taking a gamble because you have been advertised your entire life that secondary education option is a necessity to living a fulfilling life in the United States of America. I do love the fact that even not only just Elizabeth Warren, but also we had Ron Paul. Had put this on the table as well. Not so much Rand Paul, his son. His son played more into the mainstream of politics, but I actually like Ron Paul's approach in that regard, dealing with education. We had Ross Perot say the same thing, who passed away recently. And of course, yeah, you bring up Bernie Sanders. I'm not a fan of Bernie Sanders when it comes to race and reparation. I'm just really not.
Can I go to you with that too? With what you say, okay, with Bernie? Another thing to not like about that is Elizabeth's plan for free education went further. She said because of the racial disparities that are linked to economic and educational disparities, HBCUs and Black Center schools should get also an added special funding of $50 billion or more. Bernie, even though he's for free education, again, we talk about the racial part, he did not have that in his planning.
This is why I don't talk about Bernie. No, I'm literally telling you, like, he really irritates me. He irritates me. He's like it's like a brand new smelling car without the car keys. Somebody says, hey, man, you can go have that car. You go, where's the car keys? What car keys? You're like, I need the car keys. What are you telling me? There's no car keys. You don't get car keys. That's what he's one of those illusionary hope individuals, you know, and I feel even before when he had his arc notoriety, I listened to him when it came to race. This, again, people, because they were kind of caught up in the moment and we understood what Trump represented and everything. It was a lot of distractions going on. That's why I said the cultural aspects of politics is just as important, because a lot of things can get hidden. A lot of important things can be misplaced. And one of the talking points that fell flat on people's ears during his arc point of his notoriety was his responses to reparation, because this year was not the first time he was asked about reparations. During his arc phase where he was really popular, he was asked about reparations.
That's true, but he was actually for more racial policies outside of that. This is just me saying what I personally think about Bernie. I think Bernie is resentful because he thought Black Lives Matter and the Black demographic that was the loudest got in his way. And now he's been more hush on that. Like, he'll say things about racists, right? Racist things Trump do, or white supremacy being handled, but he doesn't speak on detailed policies for Black Americans anymore, even though the majority of them voted for him in the primaries in a lot of different states, like in Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, for example. He still has resentment there. That's my shot in perspective of what's going on.
You can't have resentment when you're sitting on Killer Mike's cultural shoulders, who was, he was the horn to his unicorn. Mm-hmm. Let's make that clear. Killer Mike brought attention to Bernie Sanders in ways that he wasn't able to do.
Remember,
on his own.
Bernie's still a white guy that his team has told him to back off a little bit on it.
Yeah.
You see, and they're doing it actually at the worst time, where most of the candidates are getting even more knee deep in it. I mean, your girl, your twin, your half twin, Elizabeth Warren, is going knees deep in race. You have moderate politicians going knee deep and at least having a discussion about it, where Bernie's, again, when it comes to black people, he's being more tight-lipped.
And I'll tell you why. Remember what they say about your past. It restricts you. The further he goes into it, who's to say Tulsi wouldn't turn to him and say, well, you signed the crime bill?
He did. In 1993 or 94, the 94 or 93 crime bill.
I think that's a strategy. Right. I mean, it, you know, one part he could be resentful for many reasons, but I think it's more of a strategy because... Look what Tulsi did to Kamala.
And she's going to use that same strategy. She's going to get to Biden eventually.
Yeah.
Because Biden, I agree. Well, actually, Cory Booker got into him. Cory Booker had a moment too, just to bring him up real quick.
Shout out to Cory Booker.
He said to Biden, you signed every major crime bill that has been destructive on my community, the black community. And he's been 100% factual. Also, even though he had people are split on him pertaining to NORC, and he still has been with big pharma, big corporations, Cory Booker is still better than Biden. He's never been pro-cop. Actually, with the police force that Biden tried to put on him, that's actually false. That police department was doing that right when Booker won and got in there, and he did fight against that. He did put in a lot of good policies in NORC. And he also still... lives in the community. Again, I wouldn't vote for him though. I think Tulsi, Elizabeth Warren, Andrew Yang, I just feel that they're just better. But if someone had to give me a choice between Cory Booker and Joe Biden, Joe Biden is actually the least number one. Wait, it's between Biden and Kamala. I would never vote for those two.
I am not interested in Uncle Grandpa.
Uncle Grandpa.
But I will say this. Don't really have a problem with Cory Booker.
It is. It's like, it's where he's like a... You know how we say Lamont Hill's like your annoying cousin?
Yeah.
Cory Booker is actually like the cousin that you like to see, but you forgot.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, man, yeah. Man. Oh, yeah, I remember when you did that. That was fun. Right.
And he gets a tan.
Right. I saw him. He looked like Drake. Yeah. You know when Drake tried to get that tan?
When Drake gets a tan.
When he was during the whole finals with the Toronto Raptors, that was horrible.
When Drake gets a tan, he is redder than the cedar block pyro. Okay?
But it was so funny. It did have a little bit of brown to it. It had like very light though. Like it looks like, you know when like oatmeal or grits and that lather?
Yeah.
That like leathery thing on the top. Yeah. Like, that was like on Drake's whole face, and it was like light. It was like very light brown.
Drake, you ever take chicken, let's say Purdue chicken, right? And no advertisement for Purdue. We're not advertising Purdue.
Yeah, you better give us some damn money, Purdue.
You ever take Purdue chicken out of its packaging, and then you go downstairs and do something else, and you come back, it's kind of gotten a little darker because it's been exposed to oxygen? That's what Drake looked like. He looked like a Purdue chicken face to me.
Right.
But I will say this, what is very interesting is the shifting culturally, because keep in mind, the mainstream liberal media tried as hard as to ignore Tulsi Gabbard. Remember that. In fact, they actually would have preferred of, even though they were doing the same thing to Bernie Sanders in a way.
Bernie fought his way, to be fair to him, even though, again, he's not... This time around, we already know what it is, and we have people that we think are just better. To be fair to him, he wasn't a mainliner, and they did screw him.
Yeah, they did screw him.
He fought his way to be popular. He literally organically did it by ideas, to give him and his team credit.
That's what Tulsi's doing now, though.
Right? Right.
But they would much rather kind of have to deal with Bernie, though. Because one thing they used against Bernie... which on the other side, they didn't care, because look, they put somebody in office that's 101 half years old, right? But they always used his age against him. They always say he seems to be a little bit out of touch,
even though him and Joe Biden are about the same age.
Yeah, right. But Tulsi Gabbard, young, very effective, very straightforward,
a Stargate trooper, commander. She already looked like a commander.
She just, every time I watch her, I'm feeling like I'm watching Starship Troopers.
Star Trek, something, right?
This is Commander Tulsi Gabbard logging in for the Enterprise. We took down one Klingon ship known as the Kamala Harris.
Next on the agenda, Joe Biden.
We are landing on the planet Biden, right? So, yeah, I mean, she's very effective, very, you know, for it. I think eventually Andrew Yang will be able to shine a little bit more later on. I think he's kind of in his submarine mode right now. He's taking in everything.
Well, with young people. That's why he's been able to hold on to like the five or sixth place. Because remember, he's still going to be in these debates. A lot of these dudes are going to get kicked, like half of them. If you take away half of them right now off of the base,
yeah.
Andrew Young popularity, he will still be in there.
Well, I think he's actually going to move up.
If they give him some more time, he did do well too. Tulsi stole the show. Corey came second place of doing well. Marianne Williamson and then Andrew Young. Everybody else fell flat in that debate.
Well, Andrew Yang. And I know people like, well, since said Andrew Young, we know.
Oh, I said Yang. Yeah. Didn't I? Or I said Young?
You say Young.
Well, you know, I was talking
about
the younger demographic. He appeals to the younger demographic.
But you know, we have some of our listeners can be a little bit retentive. You know, like the Prince said the when he meant to say the at 1.47. I'm unsubscribing. Okay, so I get your point, Sin.
Right.
How about this? Negro Domus. What if at some point in time, Tulsi takes on Yang as her running partner?
You know, actually, I think with Tulsi, if she did that, Andrew Yang actually would be the perfect side candidate with her. She has a lot of the same ideas as Bernie and Elizabeth, so she don't really need them. And she brings their point in a way that don't scare people who are actually moderate or conservative.
And doesn't have the history to conflict with it.
Right. Andrew Yang, I mean, it just would make sense for Tulsi and Andrew Yang to go forward with each other.
Well, that's how I felt about it.
Right. I can't really see anything else because I like Marianne Williamson, but I actually would do something with her in cabinet, like maybe put a position where she's dealing with, like, create something with mental health and welfare. But as a VP, as somebody to run with, as someone to choose to go up against Trump, of course, Andrew Yang, because where he's weak at, Tulsi is strong. You know, let's say he even has a debate with against Pence, Andrew Yang, you know, vice president, VP against VP. Is Yang strong in foreign affairs? No. I mean, with economics, yes. We're talking about, though, outside of economics, is he strong? No. Is there some holes that he has? Yes. But all those holes, Tulsi is completely an expert in.
I'll say this, though. Where Tulsi is weak at, Yang is strong in. I would say a mid-age to upper age group is very interested in Tulsi Gabbard.
I actually agree with you on that.
I would say
reliable voters are actually into Tulsi. People who you know will vote for sure.
I actually say on the other end, going down even to Gen Zers, they would be more interested in Yang.
Oh, yeah.
Because he speaks to the AI futurists. He speaks to the cryptocurrency economists. He speaks to many of the technologically revolutionary-minded seeking individuals.
And conservatives have only said favorable things about two people on that stage, Tulsi and Andrew Yang. They even the ones that I'm not voting for them, I'm gonna vote for Trump. But if you talk about favorably, Tulsi and Andrew Yang has only been able to have that cross over appeal. I mean, people, the third person is Marianne Williamson. They do like, she's very positive, and how she just says what's on her mind. She don't try to sugarcoat anything. She's done very well on interviews with. Where she's actually debating conservatives or having a conversation. But if she is too kooky or eclectic, eccentric.
Kooky is correct.
Very kooky. Yeah. She got that kooky bit about
her. And I actually will go even one step further.
But then I feel a hypocrite of saying that because Trump is president, though.
Don't matter, though. I mean, it don't matter. Does it really matter? Because the public generally didn't vote for Trump.
That's a good point, too, at the end of the day.
They said no!
And here's to be favorable towards the American public, and I want to hear your thoughts about this, Prince. Despite the institutionalized racism and the asshats who are racist, because there's white supremacy is on the rise when the white nationalists in the violence. But the general mid-tier American people, which is probably like 80% of them, they literally have no bias when it comes to race and gender anymore when it comes to voting. Remember, Hillary Clinton is a woman. She won the popular vote.
Yeah.
Tulsi and some of the other ladies on that stage can easily become president in this climate, whereas before, that wouldn't have been the case.
I actually think Laura Croft could be president right now, at this point.
Laura Croft should be president.
Okay, so my thing is this. Is I understand, because people do kind of go with that, well, Trump is president. Like, you know, there's, well, you know, Trump is president. Well, you know, Trump was put there. The American people did make a decision. And to be fair to them, they didn't want Trump in. As full of shit as many Americans can be, as we can be at times, that's one thing they were like, okay, no.
Right. Absolutely. And American people are assholes, though, now. Because you know what they're doing? They are assholes, I will say that. Because now they're using Trump as a threatening bargain.
Yeah.
You see what they say? They say, if you don't vote for Elizabeth Warren, I'm voting for Trump, Democrat. If you don't vote for Tulsi, I'm gonna vote for, like, they don't care about Trump so much, though, and they know he's been so destructive that they're using him as a bargaining chip.
Yeah,
at gunpoint for the Democratic Party. That's funny to me.
This is where Americans, this is where some of us missed a point. America, the USA, is a corporation. You have a president, you have a vice president, you have a board of trustees, you have all of that stuff. That you have a treasurer, you have all of that stuff, but. Where a lot of Americans tend to miss the point, it's like when you're dealing with customer service. You may get a customer in front of you and they're shouting, I'm going to go to the BBB, the Better Business Bureau. I'm going to report you to OSHA. And you know, working for the company, that this customer has no power, right?
Some of them do that. There was a live where I saw a dude say he switched into Diet Pepsi because he drunk Diet Coke for all these years and he's obsessed with it. But when he reached out to them for advertisement, because he got 2 million subscribers, he switched over to Diet Pepsi.
Well, but see, that's somebody unique in the culture.
You really think so? I do think
2 million subscribers, there's a difference. No, there's no, I'm telling you, there is a difference. No, there isn't. There's a difference.
Cable company. People threatened the cable company, if you don't lower my rates, I'm going to Netflix's other stuff, and they did do it.
I'm going to tell you something about
you
companies.
My grandma, you saw my grandmother. She's thinking about doing it now.
So here's the thing about it. There are two types of customers. There are two types of consumers. The consumer that's going to give you real problems and your company that's going to give the consumer what they need. That is a consumer that does exist. A consumer that is going to give the corporation a problem. There are consumers that I have seen, Sin, that they have found their way to the home office. And the home office says, wait a minute. How did you get our information? The consumer is there, says, I'm here. I'm making my demands. You either talk to my attorney or you compensate me for my troubles, right? That consumer usually shocks the shit out of corporations because they don't see them coming, because they assume that consumer is like the second consumer, which is a majority of the American public.
I disagree with you.
Hold on. Before you disagree, before you disagree, listen to what I'm saying with the second consumer. Now, because this is very important for the people to hear. The second consumer, they're going to make noise on the site. They're going to say what they say. They're going to say, I'll never support y'all again. And the internal office, the representative of the company, yeah, they're going to try. They're going to say, oh, well, please don't be that way. Blah, 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 la, 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 la. And when the consumer walks off, if they close the account, if they keep it open, or if they don't pay it, they're going to write it off, basically, right? That consumer you're talking about, the man with the 2 point something million subscribers, he's the first consumer. He's the one that can give corporation problems.
He's the majority of consumers.
Now, here's the thing about it with the American people. The government does what corporations do, which is why we have a corporatocracy. This is why state and corporations have formed a marriage. There's a cheat code that they do. And this is what I'm saying about the two consumers, right? The cheat code is this. The public clearly voted for Hillary Clinton. The cheat code was, well, we're going to put Trump in. That's what I'm saying about with a lot of these corporations in the sense of how they're dealing with consumers. They run them over. How many times have we seen the situation with Big Pharma? And they're doing these low payouts. We've seen it with Equifax right now. Equifax is really not trying to present the options where people can get paid more than $125 for the information possibly being stolen. It's a cheat code that they use. They tried it with Kamala Harris. Now we're in the era of social media where somebody like a Tulsi Gabbard can have a higher visibility in a sense.
Where I disagree is I think the first option is the majority of customers. Corporations that have been able to survive, either survive through government or they survive because they changed the policies and pleased the public. Those are the only two ways that they can survive. Every other company that didn't do one of those two things have died. If you even look at what we talk about with Amazon, right? Still kicking, but now people are threatening to get rid of them. They couldn't come into New York because the people say, I don't want you here because we value our small businesses and other things. We don't want you to have a monopoly here. Amazon couldn't come to New York. When Comcast and Verizon kept treating their consumers like shit, eventually the consumers, even the ones who weren't technically advanced, they've been leaving them in droves. You see people in my family who aren't technically advanced, who don't even have the Hulu packages and stuff yet. They already got rid of cable. You have old people who their nieces and nephews and the young people in their family are helping them get off of Verizon, Comcast, and those other cable companies. So when the American people were given a better option from cable companies, they left quickly, fairly quickly. I would say within the span of 5 years, they left fairly quickly. And now the cable companies are bleeding and they're trying to figure out what can we do. And that's not the only example. We've had constant examples throughout history, from video game companies to movie companies. When they do not correct whatever error they created, and the error is touching more than 50%, even 50% is too much. Let's say it's touching even 50% of their consumers. The consumers do leave. The only time they come back is if a company reinvents itself and fix whatever is the issue, or they're compensated. So let's say with Equifax, if people could even cheat, even though they say $125, but they could get $1,000 out of it, or $25,000 or whatever, they may consider, because some of them may not care about that. Some of them have the mindset, well, everybody probably got my social anyway. But if I can pimp this company out and get some money or even more than that, I'm going to do it. The variables do matter. I think when it comes to one thing, especially when the American people already are working themselves and they don't like to do more work and they like to do things simple, if you make things more difficult for them when they are already working 9 hours a day, 10 hours a day, they're going to get rid of you because they don't have no time for that.
The cutting off part lends more to what I was stating about the second consumer. Most consumers that are a part of that second class, they say, well, I'm done with the services. You know what companies do? They hedge their bet on getting a new account opened up, which I have seen it. I've worked for companies. I've had customers yell me in the ear, and I've tried to appease them. The customer is right culture is very real. But very few of them says, well, I'll be writing to the home office. I'm going to see what can I do to get this taken care of on a different level. I appreciate you, young man. Goodbye, right? I'm telling you, for a majority of the people say, well, I'm just canceling my account. I'm closing my account. I don't want to be bothered with you all no more. Now, that in itself, in that micro moment, that does hurt a company. We just lost an account. But again, the companies they really hedged their bet on new accounts being opening, new consumers coming in, quote unquote, new suckers, basically. A lot of people in that regard, this is what we're having with the situation, even with the voting process. A lot of the American people, they have been voicing their opinion in a way they're saying, what? Well, after the Trump and Hillary thing, after Bernie and Hillary, I'm not voting anymore. That's part of them closing their account down culture. I'm done with that. The problem still remains, though. That's what I'm saying. With the first consumer, you have those people that will change those things. Those are the people you're talking about who have caused companies to change. We got to remember now, statistically, we're dealing with 300 plus million people in this country.
You actually don't need companies to change.
So think about it like this.
Companies could close down and somebody else would come in.
Think about it like this. When you have corporations and they've been used to operating and dealing in a certain way, and let's say we had dissatisfied customers before that came before and said, well, this is what is this? Well, I'm done. I'm closing my account. I'm done with you. Like you send people in your family. Well, I'm done with Comcast. I'm done with Dish, right? You didn't pursue to have Dish change its culture when dealing with customers. So what happens?
Why? When there's better options.
Hold on. So what happens is that culture remains in the company.
No, until disappear. They get closed down.
Until you have a situation. We're talking about changing. We're not talking about going bankrupt from having so many people close.
That
because,
is change.
Well, think about it like this. This is why, for you to understand what I'm talking about, because I think you might be missing what I'm saying, or is it miscommunication?
No, I'm just saying that, right? I perceive, my perspective is that is change. If they close down, or whether they close down
change,
or they change their policy, both are still change.
Well, there is a change, but we also got to remember there's a mediocre culture here with corporations. A lot of corporations are not giving people their best. This is why you have a lot of dissatisfied customers that deal with a corporation or a company just because that company or that advertising marketing campaign in itself is in their face. If they can go to a better option, which they run into at times, they go. But if they don't, this is who they're dealing with. You know, I want to cancel this bill. I'm done with these people. I wish I can go ahead and find someone else. That happens a lot. A lot of companies are operating on a very mediocre level. What they're keeping, what keeps them afloat is the rotation of new customers, old customers, legacy accounts in many regards.
It's not mediocre if you're providing what people want. As I think in general, people always lowbrow the audience when it comes to that. If you go to McDonald's or Wendy's, whatever, you know it's not healthy for you, but you're doing it because you just want something quick to eat. And you do like the taste of it. You know, people do like the taste of McDonald's and some of these fast foods, even though they have cut down on it to try to be more healthy.
Right.
But they'll still get a cheeseburger because McDonald's is still serving its purpose. When McDonald's had changed their nugget recipe and it was nasty, people said, your nuggets are nasty. Change it. They changed it. The customers aren't criticizing it anymore. Now, there are people who are not customers of McDonald's who say McDonald's are unhealthy. Get rid of McDonald's. But they don't like McDonald's, which is why they're saying it. They like to go to Whole Foods, right? Whole Foods is doing well for them. So it's like, I think there's a lot of people who are actually talking outside of that customer service group that get into the conversation that have to understand you're not their base. You don't even mess with their brand or product.
They're part of it.
Which is why you have that particular perspective. But the people who do and who like the nuggets going back to what they were in McDonald's, or they like that Coca-Cola went back to a particular type of recipe, even though it was unhealthy, but they don't care because they like it. That's that group. And they are very critical. When it comes to the audience, they are beasts when it comes to companies. Unless there's one company that have a monopoly on every single thing, which it is very rare for there to be a company, only one company that's doing one type of service. So I'm just 9 times out of 10, you've seen people cut it off completely, change the policy, or switch to another brand, which is why we have streaming services today, for example.
Well, this is what I'll say to that. McDonald's is, it's kind of a luxury item. If you have a little bit of money, it's either luxury or necessity where you're budgeting. Some people, because I know I've been through it, where you're working with only $5 that day. You pull into McDonald's, get a double cheeseburger for a dollar. Now, if you had an option to do something else, you probably would do it if you had the money to do so, right?
I've seen people like
I'm just saying, yeah, we have those people, but we also have those other people that I'm talking about, too.
Those other people like it, too.
Right? So, well, I mean, you have to like it if you're going to put it in your mouth. It has to taste, at the least, at the very least, it has to taste different.
Right, what,
it has to taste decent, at the very least. Now, you take somebody, say, just ate the McDonald's. It's tolerable on my stomach. It doesn't taste all that bad. But if I could get a Whataburger and I had the money, I would go do that, right? We've had a lot of that consumption as well, because you got to remember, when you're talking about in the space of corporations, if you're talking about in the space of advertising, it's a competitive market, very competitive market. So just because, going back to my original point early on, and to the point where you brought up about monopolies, I mean, just because people had been dealing with, let's say, Atari for the longest. Atari in itself was in existence, right? Then you have your Nintendos, you have your Sega Genesis, you have your N64s, you have your PlayStations, you have all these other competitive entities that came out to create a genuine competitive market where it had to break one company up, right? That is what really scares companies to the part of the point which you're talking about.
Right, like Big Pharma. The holistic is becoming really big because people are fighting back against Big Pharma.
Now, that's competition. That scares a company. Now, what does move a company is, this is what I'm saying. Let's say a part of this thing about a cultural trend. Cable had been declining for years. This whole thing about, oh man, cable's really going down. Actually, cable, it started declining a little bit earlier than even people start voicing it early on. What happened with it, what expedited the process, is the inception of the dish technology. So we had all these different satellite companies come out, and to a degree, they offered something different. Something different, and whatever is different introduced into the market, for the general consumer, it's new to them. So this was introduced into the market. Cable remained unchanged. All right. Now, to that point, what you're saying about the unchanging culture of many of these corporations, because they had grown arrogant over the years. They knew people would cancel their accounts, and they knew new customers would come in and open up the account. What they did not bet on is new technologies such as satellite television coming into the market space and expediting their process and offering essentially lower fixed rates. Where customers say, well, not only am I quitting, I'm closing my account, but guess what, you all? I'm going to Dish Network. I'm going to whatever the case may be.
Customers rarely move on morality. Sometimes they do. Sometimes you get a win and they destroy a company based off morality. The only guarantee to destroy a company is if the company is not serving their customers. That is it. People who complain about Amazon not paying taxes, Amazon do have to be careful, because like I said, when it comes to the consumer, when it comes to their companies, they are not bitches. They are not stupid. They get a little bit dumb when it comes to politics, but when it comes to companies, because there's a direct connect, they are not dumb. So Amazon still serves a purpose, though. People still like the services. They think it's clean, not because they're just the only one doing it, because you have other companies on the up that's even sometimes cheaper, but they think Amazon is a quality company. Even though they're not treating their workers right, well, your services
they provide is overall quality.
Right.
It is quality.
I understand the morality of it, that the employer's not being treated right, but so far, Amazon is treating me as a customer perfect. So I have no reason to get rid of them. Now, if they start to slouch on that end, or if they slouch, or if the cost is too high,
right,
then Amazon will be getting rid of. And even when we're talking about anything when it comes to these companies, I don't care if they get cocky, because the consumers have always shown them cockiness mixed with poor customer service equals the end of your company.
Real quick, I want to put in something about Amazon, though. Speaking about morality, it's a mutual exchange. Neither the consumer or the business of interest, neither one of them have morality. They both tout morality to try to get what they want. All right? Now,
most of the time, the
people who are actually, quote unquote, if you want to believe them, that are really about morality, those are the ones that said, I don't go with that company. I'm not shopping at that space. I'm not going to that place. I don't support McDonald's because of what I know what they did in such and such country. I don't support Apple or iPhone because I understand about the factories and the suicide nets. I don't want to be bothered with that. You know, those are the people that are quote unquote about morality. The people who are actually saying, I don't want to deal with
that
company.
Most of the time. That's not all the time. You do have a small niche that they're anti all of them if they do anything inhumane.
So kind of still overall the same point.
But then there is people who do buy for companies depending on if that triggers something emotionally for them, which is a rare. But when it happens, they do move. But again, it's a rarity. We have seen it during the civil rights. We've had seen it during the prison industrial complex to an extent. We've seen it somewhat. They haven't done it the majority of the time, but they have done it a minority of the time. Majority of the time when they leave a company is because they don't like their service anymore or the cost is just too high. I get on the American people all the time about where their shortcomings come. And it definitely comes when it comes to politics because they do too much identity politics and not actually looking at the policies of a person. And it's really interesting to me, though, even though I think politics is just as personal, if not more, than what company you eat from, you buy from, and all that. But they are more savvy and more focused when it comes to a company and what they can get out of a company rather than their own, you know, political.
A nation of consumers is my point.
Oh, I agree with the nation of consumers.
Yeah, so because that's why I wanted to, you know, very succinctly make it clear. Yeah, there's an interesting book people should read. It's called The Corporate Man. It's a very interesting book. It tells you about the consumer and what they are. It's not about discounting the savviness of the consumer. It's what corporations bet on. It's what they understand with peer groups when they have case studies. I find it very interesting in the servicing industry when you're in customer service of what is stated to you when you're in the rooms about the consumer. And they give you the types of consumers that do exist. And when you're actually in the field and engaging with them, when you're in the room with the overlords, quote unquote, sort to say, and you meet with the owner and you're shaking hands with board of trustees and they're telling you what they're expecting for certain points to be made financially, fiscally for the four quarters, you think it's bullshit. Fuck out of here. Fucking customers don't act like that. What are you talking about? Yeah, somebody will come in here and shut this shit down. That's what you're feeling. When you get on the floor, consumers are about what can you give them right there? What can they get out of you?
Right.
Right. They're about that.
They're ruthless when it comes to that. And they have to be because now, companies are ruthless too. If we're talking about the human, it's a fair exchange.
That's all it is.
You don't care about your employers. Neither does the customers, but they do care about themselves.
And if
you do not perform for them, your company may go down.
Well, what's going to happen here? It's the consumer is always right culture. And because of that, that philosophy actually allows for corporations, even if you're talking about with franchises, it kind of allows them to play certain games. A consumer will come in and tell you, well, the McDonald's in Brooklyn let me do it. Because the consumer, make no mistake, the consumer is crafty. They're very crafty. That's what I say. It's not about discounting their intelligence or their savviness. It's what the corporations are willing to bet and gamble on. Think about it
and
like
I
this.
I wish they used that same mentality when it came to politics.
But so here's the thing about it. It's not going to happen because this is a brand-driven company. That's why I tell people, check out The Corporate Man. It's a great book. Check out The Corporate Man. It's a great book. People are brand-orientated. They're brand-oriented. They're driven by the brand, which is why politics has moved more so in the direction of the likes of Nike, Puma. Even how they're ruining the campaign. The one who changed all of that will always be Barack Obama. Because Obama, even down to his logo design, which the designer said himself, He said, well, a lot of highlighted design marquees I took from the Pepsi symbol. And how they marketed Barack Obama, they essentially was marketing a Mercedes-Benz to people.
I agree with you that there are a lot of loyalists, and we also see it in sports. But the beautiful thing about competition, if you're dope and you can market yourself well, being dope is only 50%. Marketing, second half of it. You do both of them, you good. Any brand, even legacy brands, can be destroyed by a fresh newcomer that has the dopeness, and the other half of it is the right marketing, and they're consistent. And that's why companies do have the fear of the customer is always right. Because once you lose sight of the customer being always right, you're exposed to everything. If you're doing something that's inhumane, now it's going to become more of an issue because you forgot that the customer is always right. Companies know to be scared now, especially when you're getting into the younger generations. It becomes even more ruthless. Yeah, baby boomers was a little bit too much of a loyalist to companies to an extent. But when you go down to Gen Xers, then you go to millennials, and then millennials, especially in Gen Zers, they will leave you in a heartbeat once another better option comes.
Because,
and companies know that, or at least they should.
The only thing that's changed since is social media. That's what I'm saying. That's what
they don't want to get trashed.
That's what's leveraged power. The consumer is always right, but the companies are kind of like, fuck off. So what, you close the account? Who cares? What are you going to do? Now, your company can have a very bad PR moment with one of your fucking employees.
I was at a seminar when they had this, and this is what the guy said. He said, not only that, because social media is definitely an aspect of it. It's a huge aspect. But he was going by generation. When he went to millennials and Gen Zers, there was some trepidation. And this is the guy who's talking to other companies about how certain peer groups work. With millennials, he basically said there's no loyalty. They're company hoppers. If you're talking about as an employer, right, who has employees, even if it means them being broke, they may tolerate living with their fucking mom and dad for another year if that means giving the middle finger to that company. If somebody pays them more, they look at what they bitching about in the NBA. LeBron, Paul. Because millennials don't give a fuck, they're not stupid. They actually know how companies work more than any other generation. Which is why they say, if you don't lock it down with me, I ain't locking it down with you, and I'm out. I don't care what it is. Somebody pay me better, if they treat me better, if I get, they have demands. And that includes even when it comes to the younger generation right now. The younger generation, they will live with their mom and their dad for a year if it means leaving a company. They don't like the fact of, well, I'm going to be miserable with you if you treat me like crap.
Well, they don't acknowledge it. Gen Zers, they're in a whole nother space. They don't even acknowledge the corporate enterprise like the previous generations. It's just whatever they can use from it. Somebody say, yo, man, you got on some Pumas, man. Them things just fly. They're like, nah, just comfortable to me. I don't look at them like Puma. I don't look at Nike. It's whatever the fuck fits for me for the moment, which is kind of how I've operated.
That's true. It's like whatever works with them, which is why they don't wear diamonds as much. Just don't rock with me. Don't look good. Can I wear some gold? Yeah, I may wear some gold if it matches my shoes. Yeah,
if it matches my shoes.
If it, yeah.
That's what I said. When you're working in customer service, you find out things very quickly about people. People are far more divested in their general interests and their wants and their lust for material possessions and services that feed their entertainment appetite. Now, when they're hurting, when they are in pain, oh yes, they're going to show up to stalk politicians. If they had a surgery that's $300,000 and they can't afford it, you're going to see them be very livid and screaming at a politician with tears in their eyes, because that's when they show up. That's when the public shows up, is when they're hurting, when they're being squeezed economically. If they lost a lot of real estate deals, there are people prior to 2008 that was doing fucking incredible. And for the most part, it was kind of like, I'm making my money. Obama's not bothering me. Bush isn't bothering me. But when they had that economic decline, they had to pay attention.
Was shot in 2004.
Right. Yeah, they had to pay attention, right?
Yeah. Got worse by 2008.
So what you're seeing right now, which is going to make it hard overall for people like Kamala Harris, it's really going to be very hard for establishment candidates. Because fuck all this shit about white, middle class, mid-America, Trump got in office because some didn't, you know, get a chance to pay attention to it.
All
right?
Lies.
No, people are agitated right now. And this last election did not help them. Because they said, look, we're willing to bet on Clinton. We're willing to bet on Hillary. We definitely don't want Trump in office.
Yeah, we're willing to bet on fat ankles.
Yeah, we're willing to have that, right? What I'm saying is this. The consumer mindset is at the heartbeat of a lot of this with this country. Brand orientations, which is why the Democrats try to heavily brand Kamala Harris. They're even trying to give her a little bit of the Obama template. Right, Obama was the best branded president I think we'll ever have
in the history of American history.
Hands down,
there'll never be nothing like that.
It was over branding with Obama,
right?
So what Tulsi Gabbard did was crack the brand in front of everybody, because actually in this country, what's so fucked up about this, and unfortunately, consumers play a part of it out of their own selfishness too. Services can be shitty. Initially coming out the gate, you can be talentless. We've seen it in music. We've seen it in entertainment. If your campaign is dynamic, if your marketing and placement is dynamic, that sells a lot to a lot of people.
Right. First run for Obama was an easy win. Everybody wanted to rock him. Like, he was just amazing to everyone. Second one was like, I'm not feeling Republicans right now. I was considering Mitt Romney, but then he was shown being elitist when his conversation was recorded behind the scenes. We saw what he was, and I'm just going to rock with Obama. But it wasn't the same when they were wearing them t-shirts and partying. Not like the first time, but the second time was more like, I'm just going to just stay.
Yeah, because look at the marketing. Like, Obama wasn't saying anything profound when he was running.
Again.
Yes, we can. And everybody was going crazy, right? Minimum content, heavily marketed, right? It's just like you're saying about some of your family members. To be honest with you, I think the services that was being provided to her, extremely shitty. If it was me on the other end of the line, and I know I have a senior citizen on the phone, I always went over and above,
right?
They're
gone. They're gone.
Right?
They're going to be done in another couple months.
Let me tell you what's so bad about it.
She's going to be right there watching her Hulu or whatever Amazon box.
And I enjoy it. I like it. I love when there's a technological shift. I love when things happen like that, because corporations are arrogant. You know how many times I've been dinged for going over and beyond for customers. When I knew I had a senior citizen on the phone and they had a hearing aid issue, hearing problems, the supervisors and overly said, you took too long on that call.
Right.
I had to wait. What? I thought the customer is right. The customer is number one for you. I thought that was your moniker. But again, that's the whole point of the branding, the marketing. And this is what has happened with Kamala Harris. This is what is happening with Tulsi Gabbard.
Let's just say real quick before we wrap up the beacon for the politicians that we think have some skin in the game that could, even if they may not win, they would still get far. So with Yang, we already know that having a human-centered capitalism is a very fun idea that a lot of millennials and Gen Zers really love. And Gen Xers are actually kind of thinking about as well. So that's his big thing. And also a lot of people do like the $1,000 a month. Marianne Williamson, her big thing is her talk on reparations and also racial disparities and positivity. And now added on again mental health and health issues in Big Pharma. That has been something that has really, really, stood out for a lot of people when it came to her. When it comes to Elizabeth Warren, her Medicaid for all, no compromise. It does shine for people who are very extreme progressives who like that idea. Another standout is her education stances and her stances on racial disparities, of course, and environmental causes. So that has been, and actually in economics too, being hardcore against crony capitalism has been something that she's really stood out for. If you think about Bernie Sanders, you know, the minimum wage has been something that has been big, universal health care. You know, he also definitely want people to understand that he is pro the little guy. So that's the thing that has been working for him. anybody else who has anything going for themselves? Oh, okay. Tulsi. Another thing that has captured a lot of people is the fact that she is anti-war, unless it's really necessary. She is not about just switching up dictators. She is for Medicaid for all, but as a public option, not to force people into that. And she's very presidential. She seems like someone you can rely on. And that's one thing that made her stand out. Now, for Kamala and Biden, the only reason why they're in skin in the game, because they are Clinton babies, and they are mainline Democrats, the only two extreme mainline Democrats that they have in the running. So that's the only reason why those two people are in the game. So far, those are the people to stand out, and those are the reasons why they stand out. And on that note, everyone, we appreciate y'all listening to this live stream. Of course, there are other topics that we really want to get into, but those will be seen as some bonus conversations, and I'll bring them up to let y'all know Trump's views on Baltimore, his foreign policies, and is the economy really good? Like, we keep hearing people saying the economy is really good, but how is that so when 42% of Americans are a paycheck away from becoming homeless and that are trying to survive? We also will be talking about Nicki Minaj exposes industry dudes. We'll talk about LeBron James ethering, how he's going to be back and how he's going to shock everybody. And also GM David, man of the Cavaliers, now Pelicans, what's going on? You know, LeBron helped your resume and now you're kind of blowing some smoke in his face. We also got the Carmelo Anthony ESPN interview. We got ASAP Rocky being able to come back to the States, even though he still is on trial. We also have Drake's care package of old songs that are recycled for an album, but it didn't have 0 to 100 on it, very weird. And then we talk about the Katy Perry debacle of Is It ripping off Flame, and how she lost in court. A settlement of $2.8 million, I believe. You can follow us on radio.com. Don't forget to download that radio app, radio.com again. Thought Crimes. We are on Spotify. We are on iTunes. We're on Google Podcasts. We are on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn. We also have our own Patreon, which you could check out, Thought Crimes Patreon. And we're also on Instagram. We're on Facebook as well. And that's on Instagram is ThoughtCrimes1984. And on Twitter is ThoughtCrimes_crimes. Also a shout out to Father Godson, also known as Yasun. And also a shout out to Brandy Kane, Trouble in Crenshaw. We're going to be playing that track right now.
that buddy shit trouble on Central.
You're tuned into the Digital Soapbox Network.